author, columnist, managing editor of LibertyNation.com, podcast host and conservative policy advocate.
We dismiss history at our peril.
Liberty Nation with Mark Angelides.
There is a new unit of time that will replace the nanosecond, and that is the amount of time it takes for an event to happen and John Kirby to get on the airwaves explaining what Biden really said and meant.
Liberty Nation with Mark Angelides.
Hi, this is Greg Corumbus. As we head into the weekend, Jim Garrity and I wanted to take a look back at an interview we did back in January with former Connecticut Senator and 2000 Vice Presidential nominee Joe Lieberman. At the time, we brought him on to discuss a column he had written for the Wall Street Journal suggesting Russia and Iran were the most imminent national security threats facing the United States in 2022. Our interview took place January 19th, more than a month before Vladimir Putin and Russia invaded Ukraine. In addition to expecting Putin to do what he did, Lieberman also explains why he thought the first Iran nuclear deal was a disaster and why Biden's chaotic Afghanistan withdrawal has lasting consequences. We'll also talk about groupthink among Democrats that has turned lawmakers like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema into pariahs on the left. Enjoy this encore presentation of the Three Martini Lunch.
Welcome to the Three Martini Lunch. Grab a stool next to Greg Corumbus of Radio America and Jim Garrity of National Review. Three Martini's coming up.
And we are glad that you are here for the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. We do have three martinis for you today, but not in the usual way. Instead of our traditional three topics, we're happy to welcome in a very special guest, former four-term Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman. Of course, he was also the Democrats' nominee for vice president in the year 2000. Today, we want to have a conversation with Senator Lieberman about his contention that Russia and Iran are the greatest geopolitical threats to the United States. We also are going to talk about some others that could or maybe should be on that list. We also want to get his insights into the current state of politics in Washington and beyond and whether there is such a thing as a big tent anymore. And Senator Lieberman, thanks so much for being with us.
Great to be with you. And I suppose I'm somewhat relieved that the three martini lunch is just a reference to the three topics, but it's a story from right at the beginning of my political career. I had begun to run for state senator in New Haven, Connecticut, in a primary against the Democratic incumbent. And I was told I should go see the local political boss. So I didn't know him, but I knew somebody who did know him. And I called my friend Dennis and I said, "Dennis, what advice do you give me about going to see John Golden?" So he said, "Go in the morning." So, I'm all of 27. I say, "What do you mean?" He said, "He has a three martini lunch. If you go in the afternoon, remember what was said." So, there you go.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, before we dive into your column, Senator, since Jim is from National Review, it's worth mentioning that when you first ran for U.S. Senate in 1988 against Republican Lowell Weicker, that National Review founder William F. Buckley Jr. endorsed you and may have even contributed to your campaign. How much do you think his support mattered in pulling off a win on the same night that was a pretty good night for Republicans otherwise?
Yeah, I think it really was critically important. I mean, it was an unusual turn of events. So I went to Yale and I was the editor of the Yale Daily News. And Bill had gone to Yale, 12, 13, 14 years before, but He really continued an interest in the Yale Daily News, and he was a kind of big brother to people who were active on it. So I got to know him in that regard, and we saw each other once or twice a year. He lived in Stamford, Connecticut, where I was from, although I settled in New Haven. Anyway, he called me up after I ran against Lowell Weicker, who was the incumbent Republican. And shall we put it mildly, an idiosyncratic Republican, had been aggressively anti-Reagan in some regards, particularly on foreign policy. And early in 1988, the election year, I get a call from Bill Buckley. I would try to impersonate that priceless voice, and I might try. But Joe, yeah, I'm thinking of endorsing you. Do you think it would end your campaign? I said, no, let me think about it, Bill, but He said, please understand, you know, I admire you and I like you, but I would only endorse you because I despise Lowell Weicker.
Well, who didn't really? But yes. You
know, he did endorse me. And this, if they ever make a movie of that election, his wife, both now deceased, Pat Buckley, was an elegant, tall lady. And after the that election campaign, which I won, they invited me over to the, and my wife over to their house in Stanford for dinner to celebrate. And she's gone out with their butler, Julian, who was English. And they had passed out bumper stickers for me at the supermarkets in Stanford. And I thought, what a picture. This grand dame. And the bumpers, incidentally, were produced by the pack that Bill set up for that campaign, which he called Buck Pack. And he said that it didn't raise much, maybe any money, but he announced that it was open for membership by anyone in the state of Connecticut whose name was Buckley. Anyway. too many good stories, but I will tell you that he wrote, I think, a couple of columns explaining why he was for me and why he hoped people would vote for me against Weicker. And toward the end of the campaign, there were a couple of really significant columns written, one by George Will and another by Paul Gigot, which I think in the Wall Street Journal, which I think really had an effect on my vote. And in other words, saying to basically Republicans who didn't like Weicker, it's okay if you vote for Lieberman. He's not a communist, and he's better than Weicker, and we'll get rid of Weicker. So I never asked Bill. Maybe I did, and he just laughed and raised his eyebrows. But I really believe that he stimulated those columns by George Will and Paul Gigot because, you know, he was the of the godfather, if you will, of the whole conservative movement at that time. And obviously,
indeed.
Yep. Great effect. Yeah, great effect, sure.
All right, so, Senator, I think the impetus to have you on this program came, you wrote to the Wall Street Journal January 2nd of this year. The headline is 2022's biggest challenges come from Russia and Iran. And we discussed this on our podcast, and we generally were supportive. But my initial thought was, did he forget about China? What's China got to do to get onto that list? And my understanding was not an erroneous omission. I think we all would agree Russia and Iran are threats. I think the only question is, you know, with the Olympics coming up, who takes gold, who takes silver, who takes bronze? So walk us through your thinking on why Russia and Iran are the top two, and maybe why you aren't, you know, you wouldn't necessarily put China in the top two.
Yeah, so that's a really good question, a thoughtful question. Really, in my opinion, there's two great power challenges to us, which are China and Russia over the years ahead. And then Iran is a special challenge because it's such a rogue extremist nation. And North Korea is in a different way a challenge. Well, the first reason I focused on Russia and China is because I really do believe they're a more immediate threat to American security and world security and our allies' security than China is. I think China represents a longer-term threat. I know people worry that China under Xi Jinping will, for instance, take aggressive action, even at the extreme, invade Taiwan, but I don't think that's probable or even possible in the near future. So part of focusing on Russia and Iran was to say these two this year are going to be the big threats to us, maybe ultimately, if they're not handled right, bigger than the threats we're all focused on domestically, which is COVID-19 and inflation and the economy. I must admit, there's also there a sort of warning, which I probably could have stated if I had more space explicitly, which is for many people, American foreign policy should really now be all about China. And we should be totally China focused. And I think that's not only a mistake, but it's highly risky because of the threats represented by Russia, Iran, North Korea, continuing Islamist terrorist threats, et cetera. So that's why I a recognition of the urgency of the threat represented by these two countries, and then part to say, hey, China's a challenger to us, but a different kind of big power challenger over the long term, and in my opinion, unlikely to represent a real military security threat in the near term, certainly not this year, which I think Russia and Iran both may be.
More of our look back at our conversation from January with former Connecticut Senator and 2000 Democratic Vice Presidential nominee Joe Lieberman. Still to come in our conversation, a follow-up on China and why he doesn't consider it as imminent of a threat as Russia and Iran. Also, Jim will ask the question, as of January, how likely he thinks it is that Vladimir Putin will invade Ukraine, which obviously has happened, but we will get his insights on why he expected that to happen. And we'll also take a look at groupthink inside the Democratic Party in particular, but inside politics in general now as well. But when you're trying to confront irrational actors on the world stage, you definitely want to have your mind in the right perspective. And that's where Headspace could possibly help some of our leaders or others dealing with some of these international crises. Look, has your mind been sprinting for years on end, leaving trails of stress, anxiety, and fatigue that are eroding your mental health? Well, if you're nodding along yes, then maybe it's time to adopt small daily practices that will have a huge impact on your long-term happiness and well-being, and that's where Headspace can help. We all say fine, that we're doing fine, when we don't mean it. Fine is not really an emotion. How many times have you told yourself you're fine when all you've really felt is anger or sadness or nerves? Headspace is scientifically proven to help you manage your feelings and your mental health. In fact, a recent study proved in just 2 weeks, Headspace can reduce your stress by 14%. So whether you want to relieve stress and anxiety, sleep better, or improve your focus, Headspace is your everyday dose of mindfulness. And that's exactly what our bosses here at Radio America have said. Different hosts here at the network have said that they've used Headspace. It's just a short, sometimes 5-10 minute meditation, and it helps them focus, helps them sleep better, and be more productive. But however you're feeling, try Headspace at headspace.com/martini and get 1 month free of their entire mindfulness library. This is the best Headspace offer available, so go to headspace.com/martini today. One more time, headspace.com/martini.
All right, let's talk about Four Patriots. That's also good news today. Fourpatriots.com/martini is where you want to go. Fantastic deals on so many things. You can get your last chance at deals on the Patriot Pure line of items, including the UV phone sanitizer, the UV wand, the sanitation solution machine, and the disinfecting power bank. But right now, their deluxe 3-month survival food kits are back in stock after being sold out for more than a year. These 3-month kits have 688 total servings per kit, which is about 8 per day, also about 1,500 calories per day. And better recipes than ever. Pancakes, mac and cheese, chili, potato soup, spaghetti, lasagna, and more. 100% satisfaction guaranteed. You can stash food away and be confident that whenever a disaster strikes, you and your family will be ready. Go to 4patriots.com/martini to get the deluxe 3-month survival food kit and the peace of mind you deserve. Plus, get free shipping on orders over $97. That's the number 4patriots.com/martini. That's 4patriots.com/martini.
Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals, and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
Back to the interview. Jim, take it away.
Senator, this is one of those questions where I hope we are not overtaken by events by the time this gets posted online. The first thing that comes to mind is, how likely do you think it is that Russia will invade Ukraine in the not too distant future? And kind of a related question, how do you feel President Biden and his administration have been handling Vladimir Putin in their, you know, roughly first year in office?
Yeah. So how likely is it? Honestly, we're all speculating, but I'm, just as we have learned from history over the last century, if not earlier, when people say things that are threatening or do things that are threatening, you have to assume that they're going to follow through on what they say or seem to be ready to do. And in Putin's case, all the things he said about the catastrophe of the collapse of the Soviet Union, his own clear feeling that Ukraine is simply almost part of Russia, certainly part of the Russian bloc, is something to take quite seriously. Look, he's a bully. He may be posturing to try to get us to knuckle under to not all of his demands, which are outrageous, but some of them, which would be a step backward. And frankly, and this goes to the Biden foreign policy, that the Biden administration has been talking tough with Putin, threatening actions which are significant, both economic and military, although I think they could even threaten and do more. But the question is, does Putin believe them? And this is in the context of just 1 year of the Biden administration, but in foreign policy, the most noteworthy, and in my opinion, terrible event was the retreat from Afghanistan, which I'm not happy to talk about, but I thought was a mistaken policy because the war was over. We were just there performing a kind of counterterrorism moral support role. And so it was a mistake to pull out, but it was also done in a way that was embarrassingly chaotic. And I think the people like Putin and people like Xi Jinping and maybe people like the Supreme Leader of Iran, Khamenei, it said that two things. The Americans are no longer willing or even able to be global leaders. They don't really want to be. But Biden wants to focus on domestic policy. So let's seize this moment of opportunity and expand our own spheres of influence and control. And I think Putin is testing Biden right now. And it's critically important for American security and world security that the Biden administration does not blink.
I was going to say, Senator, I wasn't going to get into Afghanistan, but since you brought it up, I do have a couple of questions on that. You and sure. President Biden served in the Senate together for a lot of years. I assume you feel like you know him pretty well. Are you surprised by how he handled Afghanistan? Are you surprised by what you're seeing from him? Do you feel like he's changed from the guy you used to know? Or do you look at him and say, oh, yeah, this is the Biden I'm familiar with and I remember?
Yeah, I mean, I am surprised overall. Because he was certainly an internationalist. I mean, he was the head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, the ranking Democrat and chairman for a number of years. I think particularly of his response to the war and the genocide in the Balkans after the Soviet Union collapsed, when a really strong bipartisan group came together to try to encourage first President Bush 41 and then President Clinton to take action to stop this in post-Cold War Europe. And so Biden was a leader in it. I was proud to be part of a foursome, and the two Republicans were Bob Dole and John McCain, who were the best, really. So there's a case of strong principled international leadership. But I must say, it was pretty well known that Vice President Biden was urging President Obama to really pull back from Afghanistan. So what he did, I was not totally a surprise in Afghanistan, but honestly, it was so self-evidently a mistake. To the extent that we learned that a couple of months before the withdrawal last summer, President Biden actually told Putin or asked Putin if it was okay if he relocated some of the American counterterrorism effort that was centered in Afghanistan to neighboring countries in that region, which were arguably Russian allies. And Putin naturally said, no, it's not okay. And that was that. So he saw the problem coming, but still executed it, and executed it in a terrible way. And I must say, though I know it's been a tough time to be president with COVID and all the rest, if you look at the polling on President Biden, it really began to drop after the botched withdrawal from Afghanistan. And I think it... it said to the American people that this administration just wasn't competent. And it's a little bit like what happened with President Bush 43 after Hurricane Katrina, but he recovered from it. And so far, Biden has not.
Senator Lieberman, I just want to follow up on a couple of things that you mentioned. First of all, on China, you don't think it's an imminent threat in a lot of different ways. We have seen them move pretty aggressively, though, in particular towards Hong Kong. There's also the ongoing repression, detention, some would say genocide against the Uyghurs, and they've certainly been saber-rattling towards Taiwan. So why do you not think, given at least the perception that the United States might not be in a strong position to push back, that they're not going to continue down that fairly aggressive path in the very near future?
Yeah, well, that's a very fair question. Look, in saying that, I don't think China is as immediate a threat to American and world security as Russia and Iran. It doesn't mean I don't think they're a threat.
Sure.
And they are a big challenge. They're a great power. Their economy is big. They have an enormous population. But they have taken action that's so inconsistent with our values and our interests in Hong Kong and the Uyghurs, just as you say. And it's become a society that's constantly under surveillance by its people, by its own government. But I think that the economy there is unsettled enough. Xi Jinping is now coming up to this reelection moment for an unprecedented third term. They're patient, unfortunately. They have a long history, and I think he will continue to be involved in all the bad behavior that you've described. But I don't think he wants to actually get into a military conflict situation in which the U.S. might get involved. Now, I will say this. If Russia, for instance, moves into Ukraine and we in some way get engaged in that, or there's no agreement in the nuclear talks with Iran in Vienna, let's say the Israelis and the Arabs, supported by the Arabs, strike at Iran's nuclear facilities, and there begins to be open conflict in the Middle East, at least to the extent that Iran is firing more of their drones and authorizing more terrorist attacks by its proxies. You know, it's possible that the Chinese would be tempted to strike at Taiwan while they think we are distracted in Russia or the Middle East. But even then, and of course, that would be a very hostile act. I think they're more likely to take incremental action, such as seizing islands around Taiwan or occupying them rather than actually moving into the Taiwanese mainland. But I'm making an estimate, if you will,
sure,
I guess, based on my own years of experience here. And I think that, therefore, that the immediate threat for all those reasons is not from China. It's the big long-term threat, but not the immediate threat this year.
Last question on the foreign policy. We'll get into what's going on with American politics in just a moment, Senator.
Sure.
And we're talking with former Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman, 2000 Democratic vice presidential nominee. And, sir, we haven't talked too much specifically about Iran. One of the things Jim and I have talked about on the podcast in a number of different ways is our frustration with how recent administrations, particularly Obama and Biden, have addressed this. It seems like we're more eager for the deal than Iran is, and we kind of made concessions to them, certainly back at Vienna in 2015, as opposed to the sanctions forcing Iran into making some very painful decisions. So what do you make of the approach we've seen in terms of pursuing a deal and what's in the deal?
Well, I totally agree with what you two have said about Iran. First, you got to look back at their history. I mean, this is an extremist, anti-American expansionist terrorist regime, and their reputation for not keeping agreements is quite strong and based on evidence. So it seemed to me, certainly during the Obama period, that the thought that they could make a good agreement with Iran by lifting the sanctions that generations of us in Congress across party lines had adopted to put the pressure on Iran so they would stop their nuclear program, not just to put the brakes on it for a while, was just misplaced. And it was naive, really. You know, at one point in that round of negotiations leading up to the 2015 Iran nuclear agreement, the Supreme Leader, Khamenei, said publicly that it is evident to him that the United States wants an agreement more than Iran does. And the truth is, Iran needed an agreement which lifted sanctions. They never wanted to give up their nuclear program. But they were right that America, for a host of reasons, seemed to want an agreement more than they did. And, of course, that's no way to enter a negotiation. I thought it was a bad agreement, and I was just thrilled, I suppose surprised too, but thrilled when President Trump withdrew America from the agreement. And I do worry now that even with Iran being led by this Raisi, more extreme than any president that Iran has had, and continuing their aggression, including firing drones at U.S. military personnel in the region and at our allies in Saudi Arabia and the UAE, that there's no basis for thinking that they're any more willing to make a good agreement with the U.S. than they were in 2015. So the only way to deal with these people, I mean, somebody, the head of an intelligence agency, at least, once said to me years ago that the only way the Islamic Republic of Iran will stop its nuclear weapons development program is if they conclude that that is the only way they can save their regime. In other words, it would have to be a minute before midnight, and they think, this is it. If we don't stop the nuclear program, we're out. And then they would do it. But unfortunately, we're not there, certainly not the way P5 plus one, including the U.S., are negotiating with Iran. So I think there's real danger there.
Well, when you're dealing with a rogue regime like Iran, which obviously can't be trusted, and we've learned in even more detail since this conversation with Senator Lieberman, how much the Russians cannot be trusted. You still got to deal with them, though. And so you need to be well rested. You need to be well focused. And another way to do that is to get the best sleep possible. We love MyPillow pillows, the Giza Dream Sheets, the mattress topper, the slippers, of course. But right now, the fantastic deal being offered from MyPillow.com/Martini, the six-piece towel set, regularly $109.99, now just $39.99 per set. I absolutely love these towels, as I've said over and over, my very favorite set of towels that we own. They're high quality, they're thick, they're soft, they stay soft no matter how many times you use them, and they get you dry super quick. They're made with cotton grown in the United States. There's no lotiony feel. Every set comes with two bath towels, two hand towels, and two washcloths. They're available in a variety of colors and sizes. They're machine washable, and they come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a one-year limited warranty. So for a limited time, get the MyPillow six-piece towel set, regularly $109.99 for only $39.99 with the promo code MARTINI. Visit MyPillow.com/MARTINI or call 800-874-0104. You'll also find deep discounts on all MyPillow products, including the MyPillow mattress topper, MyPillow Giza Dream Sheets, and so much more. Get your six-piece MyPillow towel set for only $39.99 today at MyPillow.com/Martini or call 800-874-0104. MyPillow.com/Martini.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Senator, let's move now to domestic politics, and particularly groupthink and versus independent think in politics today. You certainly were out on an island within your party at various points, certainly over the Iraq War. I also remember you opposing the public option in Obamacare. You ultimately voted for the final package, but made sure that the public option was not in there. And I'm sure you most endeared yourself to your party when you endorsed John McCain in 2008. Yeah. So now that you see folks like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema taking slings and arrows for standing up for the filibuster, and in the case of Manchin, at least, I don't know if Sinema ever said what her final position was on that Build Back Better bill, but a lot of venom going towards Sinema and Manchin in a evenly divided Senate. So you know better than most what they're standing in right now. So what do you make of the current debate, and where are we in terms of where you're allowed to think in your own party?
As I said to Joe Manchin personally a while ago, I feel your pain, buddy. I've been through this. And just in a kind of group interaction, there's so much groupthink, to use your word, which is a good one, in both parties. And if you separate from it and you're still going to that party caucus every week and you're going to the party policy meetings every week, you become, really, you're an outsider. And it's no fun. But you know what? I look back on those situations you describe, and I wouldn't have done it any other way, because I felt like I was doing what I thought was right for the country or for my constituents. And ultimately, that's the test you have to apply to yourself. You get to a point where you have to say to yourself, I think, in Congress or whatever other elected position you have, So when this is over, what am I going to look back and say? I played it safe. I followed the group, and I got reelected 3 or 4 times. Or I want to say, I did what I thought was right for my country, not just for my party or some ideological or interest group. So I really admire Manchin and Sinema and appreciate what they're doing. I think it's critically important. I think they happen to be right on the substance, but just the idea of what they're doing, which is standing up against, you know, a kind of mass groupthink, and it's just not logical. And the other thing going on here is that I was privileged to be in the Senate 24 years. I had a chance to do a lot of things that I feel good about. I certainly didn't succeed at everything I tried to do, but every one of the things that I feel like I helped accomplish was always with Republicans. They were always bipartisan. That's the way to get things done, because you need 60 votes in the Senate, and that's one of the reasons why I think the filibuster is good, because it encourages bipartisanship. But the truth is, if you adopt big measures when members of only one party supporting them, probably when the other party takes control of Congress, which they inevitably do, those programs are going to be in jeopardy. In a way, that's the story of the Iran nuclear agreement. Totally an executive branch move, no bipartisanship on it, and it just made it easy for President Trump, who didn't agree with the agreement, to withdraw us. And that's not the way it ought to be.
Two quick questions before we let you go here, Senator Lieberman. First of all, we've seen some sort of hinting in reports that while Manchin and Sinema seem to be relatively alone. They have each other, so they're not technically alone. But there are others behind the scenes who agree with them but aren't willing to come forward and say so for whatever reason. Did you find that same situation in the issues where you were kind of out there at least publicly on an island?
I did. I mean, on this whole Democratic push to defund, talk about defunding the police, defund the American military on the battlefield in Iraq. It turned out on one occasion I was a decisive vote. I was the only Democrat who voted against it. But I will tell you, on the public option, which I felt very strongly about, which was, to me, a foot in the door toward national health insurance, national governmental-controlled health care, which I don't think is good for the American people, and really they don't want. There were three or four or five other Democrats who were urging me on. A couple of them more quietly than I said so publicly. So I knew I wasn't alone. That encouraged me, even though the media and still the left wing holds me accountable for the fact that there was no public option in Obamacare. I am sure that that is true for Manchin and Sinema, certainly on the Build Back Better bill and also on the filibuster, and probably gives them encouragement, but it also should make us and our colleagues in the Senate even more appreciative of their guts in going out there and taking the tough, independent, principled stand.
Senator, just thinking back to those fights about military funding and the public option, some time has passed. You want to name any names? Because I got some suspects. I have some Democratic senators who I think might have agreed with you, but...
Oh, well, on the public option, I can tell you, Ben Nelson of Nebraska definitely did.
The Cornhusker kickback. Yes, okay. That was top of my list of suspects.
Mark Pryor of Arkansas definitely did, and I'm pretty sure Blanche Leakin did, too. At different times during that year, there was a little more nuance. Max Baucus was the chairman of the Finance Committee. Mm-hmm. You know, they had an amendment for a public option when Obamacare went through that committee, and it was defeated. And Baucus said to the press, if the public option, government health care, is on this bill, it's not going to pass. So that wasn't exactly I'm against it, but he was saying this is not going to work if that's on it. So there's a few names for you to put up there in the pantheon of independent thinkers.
Very good. Very good. Last question, sir. Any tips for Republicans on defeating Ned Lamont?
I don't, you know, who knows? The general feeling in Connecticut seems to be that Governor Lamont has done a pretty good job handling the COVID-19. But, you know, there's as much unsettled feeling and unhappiness about government and Connecticut as anywhere else. So I'd say Lamont is probably the favorite going into the year, but events could happen that can make it a lot closer as it goes on. So stay tuned, as they say.
No doubt. Yeah, governor's races in New England seem to have a more competitive feel to them than the ones that send people to Washington, to be sure.
Well, we've had Republican governors for big stretches of the time, even while the Democrats had many more registered voters than Republicans. But the key here is that the largest voting group in Connecticut and now around the country are independents. So if they come together in one way, they could determine how the elections come out. They've done that in Connecticut. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where they go in the 2024 presidential election, but nationally. But maybe I'll come back and we'll talk about that later.
That'd be great. We'd love to have you back. Senator Lieberman, terrific to have you with us. Thanks for your time. Thank you for an enlightening conversation.
Well, thank you both. I really enjoyed it. Maybe once we'll go out for a real one martini lunch.
Sounds good. I'd enjoy that.
Sounds great. Thank you, sir. Jim, a lot of topics, and I think we got even more from him than we expected. So a fun conversation.
If you'd said to me back in the year 2000, you're going to have a conversation with the guy you just voted against, who obviously, look, you know, the Iraq War changed the way a lot of folks on the right see Senator Lieberman. Ned Lamont changed the way a lot of folks on the right see Senator Lieberman, and the 2008 campaign. You know, like, particularly on foreign policy, he, you know, drifted to the right and ended up in a situation where a lot of folks on the right. So I always kind of liked him, but he is, you know, is as funny as we remember. It's a good way of putting
it. Yeah, absolutely. He's great to talk to. And now, of course, that he's off the line, my next question is, did you ever imagine that George W. Bush and Dick Cheney would be the Democrats' two favorite Republicans right now?
Remember all the Chimpy McBush Hitler, and Darth Vader, My hope, by the way, like for all those people who want to see some sort of unlikely scenario in which the Democrats give up and are so frightened of Trump, they don't run Biden, they don't run Kamala Harris. My dream would that they run, Congresswoman Cheney, and that she would select, I don't know, maybe Texas Commissioner George P. Bush. So the Democratic ticket in 2024 would be Cheney Bush. And getting all the Democrats to say, they could flip space. So, Bush Cheney 2024, Bush Cheney from the Democratic convention, I just think would be fantastic. I think
that would be quite a generational shift right there, to be sure. Yeah. Anyway, great, great day. And tomorrow, our usual fare. Jim, I'll see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity, National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. Do subscribe to the podcast if you don't already. Thank you, as always, for your kind reviews and your 5-star ratings. Please keep those coming. Get us on those home devices. All you have to say is play 3 Martini Lunch podcast. Follow us on Twitter. He's at Jim Garrity. I'm at Dateline_DC. Have a great Wednesday. And please join us on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.
Hi, it's Dana Lash, host of The Dana Show. Every day, I'm here to keep you up to speed on the most important stories and info that you need to know in your very busy life. And if you're always on the go and you want to stay connected, just download our daily podcast and take it with you. It's a great way to get up to speed on what you need to know and what legacy media may not be telling you. Visit DanaRadio.com and click on the podcast link or subscribe at iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.